indeed the travelling Wilburys and end of the line. Well, it's the beginning of the line this morning, if you don't mind me using an excruciating analogy there. Indeed, for those on the Monastreven Road in Kildare Town, because that's where Lochline Green is, and that's where 82 new homes will be launched this morning by Cooperative Housing Ireland. And I'm joined now on the line by its CEO to chat about the organisation, its annual report for 2020, and this very exciting development that's taking place later on. And it's a very good morning indeed to Pierce O'Shiel. Thank you for joining us on the programme, Pierce. I know you have a very busy morning ahead.
Not at all. It's my pleasure. I'm happy to speak to you.
Now, Cooperative Housing Ireland, who are you? What are you?
We're an approved housing body and a charity, and we're one of the relatively large approved housing bodies, like Housing Association, are generally referred to as housing associations. The difference with Cooperative Housing Ireland is that we are also a cooperative. We operate on the basis of cooperative principles, so that our, we're kind of a cooperative of cooperatives. So there are a number of cooperatives around the country, housing cooperatives around the country, of which Lochline Green, the estate that's being launched this morning, is part. So, and we try and foster that ethic of cooperation in the communities.
So just explain to me, because we've talked previously on this programme regularly about housing associations and our approved housing associations, our voluntary housing associations. What's the difference, essentially, between that and your cooperative model?
Well, our cooperative model, we try and engage. I mean, the intention is to engage all our tenants in a cooperative manner in their communities and to engage the cooperatives themselves in supporting each other. So there's really this notion or this idea of cooperative, self-help, self-initiated initiatives and so on within the communities, within the estates that we manage. We try really actively to foster that within our communities.
All right, let's look at some of the figures then of your report. 454 homes delivered this year, an astonishing €111.2 million loan funding drawn down 2020 for developments. 9,192 people living in your homes by your organisation. Bank of Ireland provided €191 million to you. You got a capital advance leasing facility, as it's called, of €21 million. And then 64% of that money, €706.4 million, coming from the housing finance industry. They're the housing finance agency. Those are very impressive statistics in terms of what you've done, 450 homes delivered, and 9,192 people now living in Cooperative Housing Ireland homes, and the amount of money involved as well.
Yes. I mean, there is. We all are aware that there's tremendous pressure coming on everybody in this sector to produce new homes. Every initiative that results in the production of new homes is helping that release or ease that pressure, if you like. So Cooperative Housing Ireland in the past 7 years or so has really grown very rapidly on the basis of the funding schemes that are available to us. We've grown in a, as I said, a pretty rapid manner in response to that. So, yeah, those numbers are impressive. 454 last year, and we expect to produce over 500 in this current year. The funding scheme itself, it works very well. We collaborate with the county councils, with the Department of Housing, and with the banks and the Housing Finance Agency. So it's really a collaborative and fairly streamlined process now that allows us to deliver these numbers of homes.
Sorry, I switch off my microphone. We'll bring it down to an individual level and how people interact with you and how they end up in one of these lovely homes. And I have to say, and compliment you on this, having gone through your report last night and this morning and the photographs of your developments, these are housing developments that anybody would give the right hand to live in. They are not downmarket, cheap presentations or anything else like that. fine, lovely looking homes, and I'm sure constructed to the highest degree. We'll come back to that in a moment. You mentioned, for example, that you have strategic goals, five of them: growing cooperative housing, building what's called cooperative, sustainable cooperative societies, developing leadership, raising your capacity, and lengthening or leading even the cooperative movement. All of those, that's a very ambitious plan between now and 2024.
It is, yeah. And I mean, at the centre of that is this notion of cooperation. You know, Ireland has a long history. In fact, I'm doing a bit of research at the moment on the history of cooperatives, and really the first cooperative in this part of the world, and in the UK as well, was in Ireland, in Rallaheen in County Clare. So there's a long history of cooperative ventures, activities, particularly in the dairy sector, but in housing and in other areas as well, workers' cooperatives, all kinds of cooperatives. And they all have at their centre that sort of principled idea that the people on the ground are the ones that ultimately control the entity itself, the cooperative itself.
And I'll come back to that in a moment, Pierce, because I'm intrigued by how that works. I'm looking at Leinster, for example, where you have 12 homes delivered in Dublin, 56 in Wicklow. We have Wexford has 11, Carlow 57, 18 in Laois, 2 in Offaly, 43 in Kildare. That's now in 2020. And today you'll add another 82 homes in Kildare. That more or less brings Kildare up to the highest number of these homes in the country, does it?
It does, yeah. Well, in this part of the, in Leinster.
In Leinster, yes.
The Leinster area, yeah. Now, I don't have the exact figures for the other areas, but yeah, Leinster has been a particular, well, of course, that's where the demand really is, you know, in the main, in these, in the urban areas are,
yeah,
these, you know, in Kildare and the county.
And they're lovely homes. I mean, I'm looking at pictures like Maple Park in Rivercourt in Carlow, and lovely landscaped gardens and presentations, and also examples of the wonderful families. I'm looking at Hazelwood Rise in Rathnew in County Wicklow, which looks,
yeah,
wow. That's lovely altogether. In Munster, I see, by the way, and you were talking about the others, kind of averaging out about the same figures, 40s, 50s, 60s, 71 in Cork in regards to that. There's a lovely, but the developments are really impressive. I'm looking at Bawn, Clocka Heights in Mungrick Gate in Limerick, and anybody would want to get into these homes. So before we talk about Loch Lyon this morning, tell me then how I, Clem Ryan, if I want to get on the housing ladder, might interact with yourselves.
Well, at the moment, because it's social housing, we can allocate, or it's a local authority with the support and cooperation of the local authority, these homes get allocated to families who are on the housing list, on the County Council housing list. Now, there is recently been passed an act around affordable housing, and that's a whole other area that, you know, we're not too clear how that's going to actually operate. But at the moment, we are restricted. Well, we're mainly involved in social housing. Now, as a cooperative, of course, cooperatives don't have to be social housing. You can have a private housing co-op, a group of people who come together and want to work cooperatively to develop and build their own homes. And we would support that and, you know, provide a good deal of support for people who want
to. So, in other words, if I and a number of other people get together, we can approach your organisation about the viability of helping us to build homes.
Absolutely, yeah. And we would be able to give that advice, and we would have the expertise to respond to those kinds of inquiries.
But what must we then, as people coming to you, what must we bring to the table rather than just having our hands out?
Yeah, well, every situation will be different. And this new affordable housing act, this new bill, this new scheme that's been brought in, will change that, will make that much more possible, you know, with the state. It's proposed that the state will take an equity element in these homes. So I think the notion of people coming together and collaborating and cooperating with each other to provide homes for themselves to the standard that you see these homes are at, they're A-rated, they're very, very high standards. I think that that notion of cooperation, not in social housing, but in affordable housing or in other private housing, is an absolutely viable way of proceeding. And if people contact us and come in touch with us, we will respond appropriately.
Are you, by the way, a non-profit organisation? I'm just looking at your financial figures here, very significant amounts of income and indeed expenditure as well, and the funding you receive on that. Is all monies in effect ploughed back into developments?
It's any surplus we make is really for, in the remain put aside for long-term maintenance. So it is a charity, it's a charitable entity, so there is no, you know, in that sense, there's no commercial element, there's no profit-taking within the organisation. Any surplus we make goes back into, because we would have been active for very many years, and we would have a number of, you know, you've seen the houses that have been built today are a very high standard. Well, that was not always the case. Some of the older stock is not as, you know, it needs more maintenance, needs more upgrading. So a good deal of the money's
okay, goes back into the maintenance.
Now,
a question for you then. Clamoryne is getting one of these lovely homes in Loch Lyon, having engaged with yourself and my fellow people. 82 homes, that's a huge development, by the way. We talk about, you know, when a half dozen local authority homes might come on stream, but 82 homes is a major development and a major headline issue. I'm amazed it's not making more traction in the media, given the housing crisis that we have. So, what are the obligations on me financially in regards to getting one of these homes?
Well, if you're allocated one of these homes, they're provided to you. You will be a tenant of the local cooperative, and you will be obliged to pay a differential rent, which is really the rent which is based on your income, so an income-based rent. So it's the same scheme that's used for council housing in terms of determining what the rent would be.
And who runs the cooperative? At that local level in that estate?
The members themselves. They will elect a committee locally here. They will elect a committee, they will elect a chair, secretary, you know, they'll form a cooperative themselves. Or their cooperative is actually formed, but they will manage and control that themselves. Now, they aren't an approved housing body. That function rests with Cooperative Housing Ireland.
Right.
But nonetheless, they will be a cooperative, you know, looking after the concerns of the estate.
And tell me something, Piers, because I'm intrigued by this. We're talking 82 homes here, and I'm sure there's a wide profile of families in terms of everybody and family units and this, that and the other. How did they all originally come together in such a concentrated nature of 82, the creation of 82 homes in a single town like Kildare?
Well, it's not that the individuals came together and decided to form a cooperative. It's that these properties, these houses, these homes that have been provided for them are provided by an organisation which, you know, is structured in that way, that the basis of our work is in cooperation. So these people will be, and, you know, there's a certain amount of training and a certain amount of time will have to pass and will have to be fostered. That whole cooperative ethic will have to be fostered within the community. Mm-hmm. And you know yourself that some people will engage and some people won't engage. So for us, it's to identify those people who really have an interest in managing and having a say in the management of their own estates.
And in effectively, they rent these homes. There isn't an option to buy them or anything.
No, there's no option to buy. I think that's probably, you know, the idea there is that these are state, essentially state-funded homes, and they should remain within the state's ambit, if you like.
Well, I think it's extremely exciting. 82 homes in Kildare Town. It's on the Monastreven Road in Kildare Town, by the way. The development is called Loch Lyon. And I'll tell you one thing. I haven't seen a photo of it, but if it's anything like the photos of the estates I'm looking at in the annual report, I feel like going over and claiming one for myself, except I'm already catered for. So, Piers, what's happening this morning at 11?
Well, this estate is being officially opened, if you like, or launched by the Minister, Minister Burke. And, you know, so it's just a kind of an official moment to say, well, this now is completed and finished and allocated. People are in their homes. So it's a very special moment that it's kind of a launch, if you like.
All right, and maybe at some stage we'll get to touch base with some of the people there. But on that note, congratulations to you. It's a fantastic development given the housing crisis that we're in. Cooperative Housing Ireland launching its 82 new homes at 11 o'clock this morning. And that's a lot of people who are going to be taken off the housing waiting lists and are going to be living in what obviously will be lovely A-rated houses and all that goes with it. Piers O'Shiel is the chairperson of Cooperative Housing Ireland. Great to talk to you, Piers, and great work by your organisation.
Thank you very much. Very kind.
Indeed. Okay. On that happy note, anyway, we'll take a break and we'll be back with the ESRI after this.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, we have still crime time with Kildare Gardaí to come, and we'll also be speaking with Sean Reynolds, who's the manager of the Kildare under 16 women footballers, girls footballers, ladies footballers, who are playing in the Leinster final this evening. Keep your messages coming as well to the usual sources, text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97. You can, that's for text or WhatsApp. Email studio at kfmradio.com. You can speak to us on 045 898 999. Kira, you have some news of water outages, I think, that Kildare County Council want to alert people to in areas like Broadleys and up around Leixlip as well, I think. Have you?
Well, first I'm just going to speak about a power outage that's been planned in Broadleys. That's just outside Ballymore Eustace, Golden Falls, Silver Hills and the surrounding areas here in County Kildare. The works are scheduled to take place from 9:30 this morning until about 5:00 this afternoon, and Irish Water are recommending that you allow 2 to 3 hours in time for your after the estimated restoration time for your supply to fully return. And then in terms of the Leixlip, Clem, on the other end of the county, hydrant installations may cause disruptions in Oaklawn West and surrounding areas. Those works began at 10 a.m. They're scheduled to be completed around 5 p.m. this afternoon, and again just allow 2 to 3 hours after the estimated time for supply to fully return.
All right, on that particular issue as well. And there was news of the Water Advisory Board as well, which we might get to earlier on. But let's move on for the moment now in regards to the... Yeah, I'm just doing something. I know where I'm going, but I'm just doing something else here on this situation at the moment. The latest research from the Economic, Social and Research Institute points out that increased spending on primary, community and long-term health and social care will be required as costs rise and the population grows and ages. To tell us more about this research and what underpins it, Dr. Brendan Walsh is Research Officer with the organisation. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us this morning. Why, for example, is any of this predicated on the costs of the pandemic and that?
So it's not necessarily mainly due to the pandemic itself, but we have tried to take into account some of the issues which the pandemic have maybe caused, and also to examine whether or not the COVID-19 pandemic will impact, say, the size of the population, the structure of the population and the economic conditions that will exist as we move forward. But in general, the project had aimed to provide policymakers evidence of what resources will be required, I suppose, in the longer term as opposed to the medium term. So we know that we have an increasing population, especially at older ages. We are implementing long-term care policies currently, and as you mentioned, we have the added problem of the system that has really been severely hit by the COVID-19 pandemic. And I think now more than ever, there's a need for this medium and longer term plans of where demand and expenditure pressures may arise within the system. And that's where this research came about.
And yet we're assured all the time that that because of very, very low interest rates, that there's no great cause for concern.
Yes, that's often said. I think there's two elements, essentially, which impact the projections of healthcare expenditure. One is a positive one. It's demographics. So when we are discussing these types of reports, we often see things in quite a negative light. But you could argue from a demographic point of view, we are somewhat a victim of our own success. So between 2019 and 2035, which is the time period we examined in this report, we know the total population will increase significantly, and largely due to improvements in life expectancy, the population at older ages will, you know, increase by up to 60%, and these are positive developments. We have to welcome them. But the other part of that is we then will have greater demand and thereby expenditure on healthcare as a consequence. So that's the demographic aspect.
All right, can I just come in here there, because we're talking about the projections of expenditure for primary, community and long-term care in Ireland 2019 to 2035 based on the Hippocrates model. What is that?
So it's a little bit technical, but just to break it down for you and your listeners, we've created this model which allows us to project expenditure by constructing these different scenarios that involve changes we think will happen across areas such as demographics, the health of the population, the policy measures that might be introduced, and the costs of delivering care in the future. And then taking these different drivers of healthcare demand and healthcare expenditure, we can examine how they can increase healthcare expenditure in both the short, the medium and the longer term.
But you also point out that the cost of delivering care, particularly pay-related costs, is the main driver of expenditure growth in this area.
Yes, and this would be very common in other countries as well. In general, the main driver of healthcare expenditure is the cost of delivering care, and it is especially the paid component, like you say. So I think a good example we try to give is we often hear the Minister for Finance, when they're announcing their budget each October, that X million more will be provided to healthcare in the coming year. But generally, this is related to hiring new staff or changes in public sector pay agreements, so pay increases for individuals. And at a very basic level, when you think about healthcare, 50 years ago, it took one GP to provide a GP visit, as it will in 20 years' time. It's a very labour-intensive area. And as we try to see, as we seek to try to attract people to become nurses and doctors and carers, we are competing with other sectors of the economy. That does mean you need to have quite competitive pay packages in place to attract them.
Yes, but on the other hand, and we have the ongoing demands within those within the health sector looking for bonuses and this, that and the other. We've had the whole consultants contract over a debate over the years, and we hear this mantra all the time. We can't attract the right people unless we pay them significantly buckets of money and so on. You know, when I look at what you're pointing out here, that public and private general practice of between 1.6 billion and 2 billion in 2035 will be what you call nominal expenditure requirements, and that implying an increase of between 2.9% and 4.9% on the average annual expenditure increases than that. This is going to be a driver going forward and forward and forward, giving rise to people further wondering, where does all this money go in the health sector? Is it all going predominantly into costs, as you articulate there, Brendan?
Well, it is. In terms of expenditure, the vast majority of healthcare expenditure is related to pay. The numbers we have here are quite large. But just to put them into some perspective, in the last two decades, healthcare costs in Ireland have increased by about 4.5% annually. And we're projecting actually something similar in the coming years. So it's not necessarily that we're completely out of whack with what was happening previously, but we do think there could be efficiencies in the system where it may not necessarily lead to cost savings, but it will be bending the trajectory of cost growth to maybe more sustainable levels. And as we look at a broad range of services here, one of the benefits of that is we can start to compare the growth across different services, which should give policymakers an understanding to frame decisions about what parts of the system should be prioritised for investment. So, for instance, you mentioned general practice there. We actually find that general practice has one of the lowest rates of growth across these years, while things such as high-tech medicines and social care see much larger increases in projected expenditure.
Now, one of the things that I note there is, and I'm wondering, is it a very subtle dig at the policymakers in this, that and the other, is that you say the scope of your analysis is hampered by the poor data available for many services, and that policymakers should prioritise development of a health data infrastructure that caters for the requirements of both local and national level service planners. I'm going to be flippant to some extent now, but would that kind of reflect the idea that do people within who are making all these decisions within the health sector, within budgets and that, do they really know the precise data that is required to inform those policy decisions?
Well, based upon the health aid infrastructure we have, it is very difficult to know exactly often what you're spending your money on. So we all know this old adage of money should follow the patient. But in an Irish setting, that's actually very difficult to do. It's very difficult to follow a patient in an Irish system. So for people who may have of cancer, who may have had a stroke or other illnesses, there's no real ability for us to understand the full picture of their service use and their service care expenditure, and to ascertain if particular patients or particular groups could be treated in a more cost-effective manner. So one of the key policy recommendations we think are borne out from these results is related to the data. We think it's vital that we improve the data infrastructure here. So we start implementing things such as individual health identifiers, electronic health records, and proper health information systems within the broader Irish healthcare system.
All right, it's interesting indeed. And we are talking about projections based on the data available, but it seems the one conclusion one can make from it, things are going to get cheaper, folks. More and more money, even in the billions, is going to be required over the year. And one wonders, ultimately, at the end of that particular day, by whatever year we're talking about here, mid-2030s or whatever else, if we'll still have the same problems that we have in the health service nowadays. Billions been poured in, and yet all the old issues that arise continuously, currently, in the past, would seem to pan out into the future as well. We'll try not to get cynical about all that. It's very interesting research indeed on those projections, that increased spending on primary, community and long-term health and social care will be required as costs rise and the population grows and ages. The analysis by the Economic, Social and Research Institute, one of its authors being Dr. Brendan Walsh. Brendan, thanks for your time.
Thanks very much.
And thanks indeed for talking to us this morning. That's Dr. Brendan Walsh. Oh, I better take a quick break now, and we'll have Crime Time right after this.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, it's a hello and a happy belated birthday to one of KFM's biggest fans, I'm told, Mary Dowling, who's 80, and she's from Newbridge, from her sons in the UK, Bernard, Alan and Tony. They say, put the kettle on, ma'am, we'll get home shortly. Her favourite song is Nana Muscuri, White Rose of Athens, if we had time to play it. Well, I'm not sure we'll have time to get a song in like at this stage, because we have Crime Time and we have then the under 16 manager Sean Reynolds to chat to before we go at 11. But congratulations to you, Mary Dowling, 80 years young today. And the three lads are coming over from the UK, Bernard, Allen and Tony. So get the kettle on and the tea ready.
Crime Watch on KFM.
With Manguard Plus, Ladytown Business Park, Nace. We keep it secure and safe 24 hours a day. 045 408 300.
Now, this morning we are joined by Garda Gary Cogan from Nace Garda Station. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Kara. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you, Gary. We're going to start with the sad news. We obviously heard this morning there was a fatal traffic collision overnight in Clane.
Terrible tragedy overnight, where a gentleman lost his life in a traffic collision. It occurred between 11.45 and 12.15 in the early hours of this morning, and we will be appealing for anybody that was in the area that might have dash cam footage or may have witnessed anything to come forward and contact us. Our condolences with the family, and we have forensic collision investigators at the scene at the moment carrying out an inspection of the scene and an investigation. And so the road is currently closed, but I think it'll be open around midday today.
Okay, perfect. Just about to ask you about that, Gary. And you did note, obviously, the roads policing unit in County Kildare have been on extra alert over the past few days, and you want to note something in particular. On the 24th of July, just last week, there was a car caught going 182 kilometres an hour in Osbertown in Nace.
In Osbertown, in a 100 zone. It's one of a number of drug driving detections that the roads policing unit had. So that person was arrested, and they'll be charged in relation to dangerous driving. They'll be charged in relation to driving under an intoxicant, and they'll be brought before the court. And we'd like to remind people there is a need to be responsible and take care on our roads. It's a very vulnerable place for all of us, and it can be quite dangerous when people behave irresponsibly. Now, there's no suggestion that anything like that has happened in last night, but it's just a timely reminder of how delicate we are and how much we need to take care on the roads. So behaviour like drug driving or driving at excessive speed isn't acceptable, and our roads policing unit will detect and prosecute offenders for that.
Now we're going to turn to burglaries now in the county, starting with Newbridge, also on the 24th of July.
Yeah, there was a burglary overnight in Georgia Street, in the pedestrian street there in Newbridge, where a premises was broken into and a sum of cash was taken. It was between 4:30 and 4:40 in the morning, so So it would have been unusual enough to have people on the street at that hour of the morning. You know, it wouldn't be very busy. So we're asking anybody that may have been working or on their way to work or delivering that if they've seen anything suspicious to contact Newbridge Garda Station in relation to that matter. We'd be anxious to hear from them.
Now, another burglary in Pulafuca, Gary.
Yes, so this was in a house where the house was vacant for a number of days. So it's quite a large window. It's between the 18th and the 23rd. The rear panel of the glass was removed. So it strikes us that this was a professional burglary. You know, they came down there looking for the premises. So we'll be asking people to keep an eye out for, or if they saw, you know, a suspicious-looking vehicle, possibly a high-powered vehicle that may have been in the area at the time. It may have just triggered them at the time, and we'd ask them to come forward and let us know. There was another burglary in Black Trench within that time period, where again the back door was targeted and a sum of jewellery was taken. So if anybody saw anything suspicious in either the area of Pulafuca or in Black Trench on the night of the 23rd, we'd ask them to come forward to us with any suspicions or any information they may have.
Gary, we're going to finish up here this morning with fraud. A large amount of cash was taken using text messages scam to get someone to click on the link. We've heard about these so much, and listeners have been in touch with numerous scams that are going around.
Yeah, this is something that I suppose an awful lot of us have heard of them. An awful lot of us have received the text message or the phone calls. I've received two in the last couple of days from a bank that I don't bank with. But what unfortunately is happening is that other people still haven't heard, so it's worthwhile talking to your elderly neighbours, talking to your elderly family members, speaking to people that perhaps may not be aware of this type of thing and giving the information that this is happening. We would advise them not to click on any links, not to engage in any conversations. The best thing to do is go to your phone book and contact your bank or contact social welfare or whoever has purported to be contacting you. Contact them directly. But no reputable business, no reputable government department will ring you looking for details over the phone. People may look for your name, but they will not be looking for your account number. They will not be looking for any pieces like that over the phone. So don't give it to anybody. Don't entertain those calls. Don't click on those text links or email links. Contact the branch or the department that has looked as if it's reached out to you directly, and they'll be able to clarify if this is genuine or not. There's a huge number of them out there at the moment, and unfortunately people are still being caught, and with a number of them in the county in the last week. So we'd ask people to be vigilant, and maybe if you have the opportunity to speak to some of your older neighbours or people that you might be worried about might be tricked by something like this, people that are perhaps more trusting and less cynical than you and I, that they might give them a heads up on this and give them assistance if stuff like this does come in to reassure them. If they're worried about anything, they can of course contact the local station as well.
Yes, great advice there, Gary. And it does have to be noted that obviously people who are older don't tend to be as active on social media, etc., and seeing these messages. So thank you for reiterating that. And listeners, if you can get in touch with any of your family or neighbours or anybody that you think may be the target of a scam, do so and give them that advice. From Garda, Gary Coogan of Naas Garda Station, good morning to you.
Good morning to you too, and thank you very much.
Crime Watch on KFM.
With Manguard Plus, Ladytown Business Park, Naas, PSA licensed, 045 408 300 or manguardplus.ie.
Thank you, Ciara, and thanks, Gary, for that. Now, on the way, we'll have Sean Reynolds in just a moment. But first of all, regarding our Greyhound chat that we had this morning, we got an email from, let's call her Sarah. A very interesting email address you have, Sarah. And she said, Clem might be interested in some of the items we spend money on for our greyhounds. As a typical greyhound-owning family, we discussed the whole report in regards to that. And it should be said, Sarah was in touch with us last year as well when we were discussing welfare issues around the industry, and people might recall that. She says, firstly, we pay for our land, which is exclusive for our greyhounds, kennel buildings. Both of these have initial outlay plus maintenance. Then there's fencing, a professional gallop, which was very expensive to put in and is a lot of money to maintain. Equipment, toys, we go through a lot of toys. Meat, we go to two local butchers, we rotate weekly. We spend €400 a week on meat alone. Dog nuts, our last order of dog nuts cost €1,400. Our dogs have coats for rain, warmth, light, warmth, light rain in varying sizes. They also have racing coats in various types, T-shirts even, and bandanas. They get supplements, natural treats, bones and cookies. Our land needs to be maintained, such as a local farmer makes hay in our larger paddocks, and all paddocks need grass cut and maintenance of weeds. Our dogs also have dog swimming pools, a dog treadmill for the bad weather, various collar and leads. For racing greyhounds, all medications and medical is paid for by their owners, not by insurance. My family, Cesera, has been involved with greyhounds in Kildare for four generations and have continuously paid out for their care. They're not our business. They're not our livelihood. They are the centre of our lives. And by the way, my dogs love listening to your show. That's lovely. And that really brings home the genuine love and affection. As we know that greyhound owners and greyhound fanciers bring to their animals, whether you use them for racing or indeed have them adopted, as so many more people are doing. And they are beautiful dogs and wonderful. And I love greyhound racing. And, you know, there's a minority in any sector of society that will always abuse it. But the whole industry and the whole sector should not be damned because of that. Great, great people. I've been at the Derby. Indeed, I have relations down in the Banner who have been involved with greyhounds for years and years in the local village of Clarecastle. It's a big thing altogether. And yeah, they love their animals and things like that, and their animals love them. And I love that, and I'm delighted that your dogs love listening to the show. So thank you very much. Now, to move on, it's a big, big evening for Kildare footballers. Yes, we're talking about the girls under-16s who contest the Leinster final, A final that is now. And the team has been named. The game throws in at 7:30 p.m. in Kinnegad. The opposition are Meath. And the team is as follows. Lauren de Courcy of Kilcullen in goal. A full back line of Sarah McGovern-Raheens, Zara Hurley, Kilcullen, and Katie Halbin, St. Lawrence's. Halfbacks Olivia Monaghan, Kilcullen, Emer Glancy, St. Lawrence's, and Maeve Maguire of Clane. Centre-fielders Orla O'Mahony of Nafianna, Shiver Galvin of Sarsfields. Half-forwards Edwina Birchall, Kilcullen, Maya Doyle, Ballymore, Grace Murta, Milltown. There's that name, Murta, again. And full forward line of Nia Farley Kill, Alana Prizeman of Nace, and Leah McGovern of Raheens. And let's give you the rest of the panel, because these deserve to be mentioned reaching a Leinster final. They are Cuiva Smith, Nafianna, Zara Beattie, Sarsfields, Cuiva Bagnall, Nafianna, Amy Nielsen, Ellistown, Cuiva O'Sullivan, St. Lawrence's, Grace Montaigne of Sarsfields, Saoirse O'Gorman, Salins, Julie Brannigan, Ballina, Tegan McGonigal of Kilcock, Joanne Ryan, St. Lawrence's, Cuiva Ní Bhriachtal of Ballina, Anna Price, Nafianna, Erin Healy, Sarsfields, Emer Toohey, Eadstown, and Erin Brereton Foley of Castle Mitchell. The management team is mentors Dave O'Brien, Raheens, Karen Clifford, Sarsfields, COVID officer Katrina Kay of Milltown, FLO. Sean will tell me who that is, what that is in a moment. Agnes Maguire from Clane, physio Amy Horan, Ballymore, and the captain Emer Glancy of St. Lawrence's. The Larry's ruling again. And of course the manager is Sean Reynolds, who joins me on the line now. You must be a very proud man, Sean, about this evening's achievement. Hello to you.
Hello, Tim. Thanks for having me on. Very proud of this group of girls.
Tell me about your route to the final tonight, Sean.
I suppose we trialed early in May. We started off training three nights a week, and we had a range of challenge games coming up tonight. It's actually our seventh Wednesday in a row to play a match. Played Meath in the first round, very tough round. Lucky to get out of it in the end. I think a bit of drive from the girls got us over the line, and we had a good win against Westmeath then last week. And out of the panel at 31, I think 29 girls have been used so far. So, look, the ball contributed in every way into it. And let's see where it goes tonight.
That's a fantastic spread of people. You might just move a little bit for me, Sean, so we can get just a clearer run on your line in regards to that. Now, you've already played Meath and you've already beaten them. Will that have any bearing, do you think, on tonight's game?
In thinking back to the Meath game, Clem, they were a very strong team, put us under huge pressure for the whole game, and I'd love to say it was something management done on the sideline, but literally the girls just dug it out in the end. They weren't going to be beaten. Whoever wins tonight, they're two great teams, and I really think it's whoever wants it more now tonight will get over the line.
I imagine both teams will want it, and there'll be no certain deficit in that end. Was the previous game against Meath home or away, Sean?
It was at home.
So so you're going into the Lions then, really, tonight then, heading up to Kinnegad on that. And, you know, I know this home and away thing is often overplayed, but it is a factor and will add to Meath's encouragement tonight that they are playing in Kinnegad, near to home.
Look, it will. And I suppose Meath are coming in after winning the last few, I think two or three Leinster A titles, whereas Kildare, it's more of a novelty for us to get to an A final at 16s or minor or any level.
Yeah.
And but look, I tell you, there's a group of girls there, Clem, and you could literally pull their names out of a hat and they won't let us down, you know.
You know what strikes me, Sean, about going through and all those wonderful names that I came across as well? What strikes me is the enormous spread across all clubs in the county that's on this team.
There's 18 clubs, and when we got down to the last 40 at trials, there was actually 39 clubs, you know, and like that shows you how it just had to be narrowed down. But 18 clubs spread, and literally the players that were sent in from the clubs, you know, like every night we go to train, it's a privilege to be down there and just watch them, and you're just in awe of them every night you come off, because like the work being done at club level in Kildare is huge, and literally you don't have a lot to do with them when they come in, you know.
And of course, Kildare has huge development work done over recent years. I mean, it's not so long ago since Kildare won an All-Ireland under 14A, and many of those players have now graduated through the ranks up onto the senior teams even. And that's one thing that's very, very strong in the county. I mean, we talk about men's football a lot, but people would need to know that the work, but it's the explosion in numbers as well, Sean, of girls and young women who are taking up Gaelic football.
It's the explosion in numbers. Like, I've been involved with Kildare over the years for a long time, and like when you see, I think there's 700 girls playing at 16's level, they would have, you know, like there's 7,500 players, you know, Meath of the same, massive development. But like you could literally pick two or three teams and you know they're going to compete. You know, you look at all around the clubs, there's no club in the county now that doesn't have ladies football at every age group. And look, it's a privilege to be involved with them, and whatever happens tonight, I tell you one thing, there's a group of girls there that they're going to go on and play football for a lot of years with their clubs and a lot of them with the county, you know?
Well, as we said, it's not quite home venue for Meath, but they've only to pop across the border into Kinnegad there close by, and I suppose Meath people will say anyway that Westmead was originally taken from them and that it might be their Crimea. Listen, Sean, it's great to talk to you. We wanted to mark what is a huge occasion this week for Kildare football. Two Leinster finals, the one next Sunday, but first comes first, and that's tonight. The Kildare under 16A team taking on Meath in Kinnegad at 7:30 in the Leinster under 16A final. Congratulations to you and your entire team around you and your backup team. You might tell me, by the way, what's an FLO?
Female liaison officer.
Ah, no.
She's the lady that makes Agnes and Katrina there. They make the whole thing tick, you know.
You've just added to my education, I can tell you. Agnes McGuire from Clane, well done to you. Your backroom team, Sean, but in particular, the 30 ladies who are named for action representing 18 clubs tonight, and we wish them absolutely the very best of luck in that. Well done you, Sean. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Tim. Cheers.
Thank you indeed, and bye-bye. Sean Reynolds, manager of the Kildare Under-16 A's.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
with Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Thank you very much indeed for your company throughout the course of the morning and all your messages as well. Joe rang in to say, does anyone have an explanation for Robbie Keane getting $250,000 a year? For what? That money could be better spent giving it to Jack and Jill. And Pat rang and wants to know, if someone is banned from racing, how come he can still go to the track? Okay, thank you for your messages, and indeed producer Kieran Noble. We'll do it all again tomorrow morning from 9. John Dunn is up next with the 11 to 2 show. Don't forget our main news between 1 and 1.15 with Ciara Plunkett, who will then be back with you from 2 o'clock with Kildare Focus and lots more interesting topics for you. Ben Atkinson has K Gold, great music of wonderful memories between 3 and 4, and Paul Power will drive you home between 4 and 7. That's followed by Liam Kett from 7 to 10 with great country, including the first hour of American country. That's your menu for today. Enjoy it. Stay safe. We'll do it all again tomorrow. To the